There's so many women that don't see Black women. They don't see women of color in the same way. And so, yes, you may experience sexism. You might experience gender discrimination, but a white woman will never experience racial discrimination in the same way that a Black woman will in the United States. That's just the reality of it. And I think there has to be some empathy in that. So one of the things, yes, is the wage gap. When we say women make, we often are talking about white women. And so we don't highlight the fact that women of color anywhere from 48 to 68 cents on a dollar. When we talk about leadership positions, women in leadership, less than 4% of women of color are in the C-suite, whereas 1 in 5 white women will be advanced and 1 in 25 women of color will be advanced. So there are some inequalities that we definitely have to talk about, and we can't talk about gender equity if we don't talk about the racial implications as well.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. For centuries, society has grappled with both implicit and explicit examples of racism that have played out in many different areas, including legislation and the criminal justice system. But now scientists may be able to provide more insight as to why this might be the case. A recent study examining racial disparities reveals that people are more empathetic towards whites than towards blacks, particularly when related to medical treatment or pain. The discovery known as the racial empathy gap shows that people, including medical personnel, assume black people feel less pain than white people. And this helps explain the disparities in areas from healthcare to criminal justice. A lack of empathy can produce national tragedies, like in the case of George Zimmerman, who followed Trayvon Martin because he perceived him as dangerous. Zimmerman did not approach Martin with kindness, nor stop to consider this young man as anything other than dangerous. This is why he ultimately shot and killed Martin. This is the real cost of the empathy gap. And it extends to workplaces. Men often lack awareness and therefore empathy for the barriers all women face at work because of gender and racial inequality. Similarly, white women often lack understanding and therefore empathy about the challenges that racial and ethnic minority women face. On this episode, my good friend, Meenda Hart, speaker, founder, and author of The Memo, What Women of Color Need to Know to Secure a Seat at the Table, will unpack what the empathy gap is and what white women need to do to advance equality for all women. Imagine you're watching someone pierce a person's skin with a needle. Do you feel the person's pain? Does it matter if the person's skin is black or white? For many people, race does matter, even if they don't know it. For example, research finds white people feel more empathy when they see a white person's skin pierced with a needle than a black person's. This is known as the racial empathy gap, and it helps explain disparities in everything from pain management to the criminal justice system and workplace inequality. But the problem isn't just that people disregard the pain of black people. The problem is that the pain isn't seen or felt. Here, Meenda shares why the empathy gap is a particular issue for women of color at work.
It's interesting because for so long I've heard women, and I use that very broad strokes, is women have a hard time in the workplace. So it's funny, I was on the plane and one woman who happened to be white, she was sitting next to me and she asked me what I did. And I was actually on book tour and I'm like, oh, you know, I wrote this book. And I was kind of like downplaying it because it was early kind of in the process and I didn't know how she would feel about hearing about the kind of book that I wrote. So I was a little like shy about it. And we ended up, you know, having a conversation. And she's like, you know, you really should have wrote a book for women. Like, I don't know why you just talk about black women. And it was in that moment that I had to continue to lean into my courage because there's so many women that think like her, right? That they don't see Black women, they don't see women of color in the same way. And so, yes, you may experience sexism, you might experience gender discrimination, but a white woman will never experience racial discrimination in the same way that a Black woman will in the United States. That's just the reality of it. And I think there has to be some empathy in that. So one of the things, yes, is the wage gap. When we say women make, we often are talking about white women. And so we don't highlight the fact that women of color anywhere from 48 to 68 cents on a dollar. When we talk about leadership positions, women in leadership, less than 4% of women of color are in the C-suite, whereas 1 in 5 white women will be advanced and 1 in 25 women of color will be advanced. So there are some inequalities that we definitely have to talk about, and we can't talk about gender equity if we don't talk about the racial implications as well.
Without empathy, it's really hard to see each other. Empathy enables us to see our differences and different experiences of work and life. Without empathy, it's too easy to deny discrimination. Research has found that one of the key features of modern racism is denial. Examples of this can be seen every time someone says, "I don't see color," or "I have nothing against Black people, but..." These statements justify or hide racist beliefs, ideas, and biases. When white men and women are confronted about the impact that these statements have, they deny that there was any negative intent or outcome. This provides the opportunity for white people to take offense at being told their words, ideas, and beliefs are racist. This makes being confronted about racism and sexism more offensive than the racist and sexist behavior, which encourages all minority groups at work to remain silent about the everyday discrimination and marginalization they encounter. Combined, this creates an entire workplace culture that fosters inequality, which has extremely negative outcomes for women of color. In writing the memo, Minda hoped to shed light on these very challenges that women of color face at work.
I've been an avid reader of all kind of books. And as a woman of color, as a Black woman, I often don't get the privilege of reading authors that look like me in a business context. And so after reading tons of books by my white men and women who had really great content, but I never saw myself in the narrative. And I thought, wow, are other people feeling this way? And so it wasn't until I read Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg that it kind of pushed me to say, okay, you need to write the book you want to read. Who's going to be the representative of, you know, women of color in the workplace? Because our experiences are not the same as white women. Yes, there are hierarchies of oppression, but, you know, we tend to fall on the bottom scale. And so I wanted to be able to tell the stories of women of color, but then also let our counterparts know that, you know, the workplace is not experienced the same. And so that was really the impetus for writing the book, the memo. I had so many women of color that, you know, came to the book tours, have written me, direct messaged me, and just said, "Oh my God, thank you. Thank you for, you know, being courageous and telling our stories. Your story was my story." And it, and they felt just this range of emotion by reading it, and just how, I guess it was a blessing that they found it, because so many people were just going through some inequalities in the workplace at the time when they read the book, and they just said, "Wow, it just really gave me a new perspective." So it wasn't just kind of this, "Woe is me, I'm a, you know, woman of color in the workplace," but providing solutions on, yes, these things do happen, but here's what we can do, and here's what our counterparts can do to make the workplace better than we found it. And I now say it's not my book, it's our book, because I think there's some common themes that all of us experience in some way. And what I love from, you know, allies that read the book, or our managers who happen to be white, and they're like, "Wow, I had no idea this was going on. I didn't take the time to think about how I might be, you know, oppressing someone of a marginalized group. And, you know, thank you for this." And then on the flip side, I've had a lot of white women say, "You know, it was a hard read, but it was a necessary read. And I'm, you know, grateful for the gift, so that I know to do better, because I wasn't aware of some of, you know, as you said, the blind spots or the unconscious bias or the conscious bias." And so it's a conversation starter for a lot of people, because as Black women, we talk about it to each other all the time, but we don't often talk about it out loud.
To practice empathy, we have to be willing to talk about our different challenges, biases, and prejudices if we ever hope to confront them. Here, Minda shares why having courageous conversations is so important, particularly when it comes to supporting women at work.
So we often talk about a seat at the table, but I know when I was in my traditional workplace, I had a seat at the table for a long time, but I wasn't able to really give my voice to some of the issues that were going on. I was just so grateful just to be in the room because at one point they didn't have any women of color in the room. And so I'm like, oh, I don't want to push the envelope. But part of having that seat is making sure that you are using your voice, right? You're leaning into your courage, talking about some of the things that wouldn't be talked about in those rooms if you weren't sitting there, right? So what does it look like to secure your seat? And that's through self-advocacy, that's bringing other women of color along with you. That's a sense of ownership and responsibility. And so if you are the first one, hopefully you won't be the last. Yes, there's injustices that happen inside the workplace, but part of the book is what are the things that we can do? How do we add to our career toolkit? And what I found is, and even in my own experiences, that sometimes as a Black woman, we shrink inside the workplace because we don't want to be seen. If we say a certain thing, then someone might think we're being an angry Black woman, or if we talk about something, then we're using the race card. Like there's, we have to walk on eggshells at every turn. And so one of the things that I am an advocate for in the book is having these courageous conversations and hopefully giving our counterparts the benefit of the doubt of being courageous listeners. Because I think we're all like walking on, or at least people of color are walking on eggshells because we're afraid that white men and women can't handle us telling them, don't touch my hair. You know, it makes me uncomfortable, right? Without coming off, you know, as aggressive or those sorts of things. And I think, you know, we're all adults and we have to say what we need from people. I think also the other part is the building strategic alliances. You know, as Black women, many of us have just been told, hey, you go inside that job, don't rock the boat, keep your head down, work really hard. And so we do that. We come in early, we stay late, and we don't get to know some of our counterparts in the way, you know, we're wondering why aren't they noticing us? And all these things are, I make the joke in the book, you know, things are happening after six. Why we're sitting in our queue, you know, people are having conversations. They're talking about things coming down the pipeline. And we're not a part of that because we're not getting to know people in the same way. Sometimes we think that we don't have anything in common with others because they don't look like us. But, you know, that's part of our bias as well. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity, especially in a remote working environment, where we can make it better than we left it a few weeks ago.
Silence, when it comes to racial issues, is a luxury, a privilege, and a choice. When we don't speak up or call out exclusionary exchanges, biases, and prejudices that we witness or experience, we encourage them to continue. Silence allows us to ignore the experiences marginalized groups face at work, and the role we play in perpetuating racist and sexist behaviors. I am not afraid to talk about race or racism because I want to understand these issues and how I perpetuate them so that I can stop. Here, Minda shares an example of the real cost of silence.
There's one chapter in my book called Everyone Can't Be a Golden Girl, and it was one of the hardest chapters for me to write because it was one of the hardest time periods in my career because I had always been the only one. So I was very used to being the only, you know, minority woman in the department or in the company. And so I was used to that, even though it never felt amazing. But when I went into one environment, it was being the only one and then being reminded day to day, multiple times a day, that you're the only one at the hands of, you know, other white women. And the workplace culture was so toxic. Everyone seen that these things were going on, but nobody did anything about it. And so often at first, the story I told myself was that, you know, this one woman, it was all her fault. But actually, when I look at it, it was actually the whole office because they allowed her to, you know, call me the Black girl in certain meetings. They allowed her to undermine my work. And I, it just so happened that she was maybe 20 years or so older than me. And I was hired to come in and share a territory with her. And she was like someone that people really revered. But when it came to dealing with me, she, for some reason, just could not deal with it. And there was, I think, this empathy gap, right? And I remember when I had to make the decision to stay or leave, one of my managers said, well, we hired you because we thought you had thick skin. And in that moment, I realized that you can have the thickest skin, but all the things that you accept are the things that you regret. And I regret that I accepted so much that I forgot that I don't have to just survive in a workplace, but I can thrive and I can choose to work with better individuals. And I often think, what if one person would have advocated for me in that environment? Because I had a lot of work friends, but no one ever said anything. No one ever showed up as an ally. And I thought, what if I was your daughter? What if that was your wife? What if that was your, you know, sister in that situation? Would you have felt differently? And so I think that there is this empathy gap, and we have to humanize these situations. Don't just look at it as, oh, that's her issue, right? But it's not mine. Start building relationships with people that don't identify the same way you do, and be a courageous listener. So when somebody tells you that, you know what, actually what you said to me made me feel X, Y, and Z, it may not have been your intention, but being a courageous listener, because it took a lot of courage for that person to come and tell you how they felt. And so I think once we foster more critical conversations, then we can make the workplace a little bit better.
I always say that when it comes to advancing gender equality at work, what white women want from men in organizations, they need to be prepared to give to women of color and all women. That means know what the barriers are that women of color face at work and then take steps to remove these barriers. Here, Minda shares how white women can be success partners to women of color.
In order to close this empathy gap between, I feel, white women and women of color, there is a gap, right? We can say that all women in the workplace matter and we can sing those songs, but what does it look like in practice? And one of the things that I talk about is moving your allyship into action. What does it look like to be a success partner, partnering with someone else? And it's not giving up your privilege, but it's sharing the privilege to benefit somebody else. And I think as white women, it's first understanding that there are these differences, and it's not, race isn't a bad word. Like, you're not a bad person because maybe you do have bias. We all do, right? But it's acknowledging that there's room for improvement. And I think the gap is so wide because there's often only been a few seats. And I think white women have to realize that there is a privilege that you have that I don't. And for some reason, I know a lot don't want to look at that, right? And I hope that this conversation and future conversations will allow people to get to know each other, because the reality is many of us don't have relationships outside of the workplace. You know, we're not hanging out with each other and getting to know each other in a real way. And I think once we get to know each other outside of the office and as humans to humans, we would be more empathetic of when someone calls someone, you know, an angry Black woman in the office or touches their hair that you don't feel like that's not your problem because, you know, that's just Susie being Susie, but could Susie be a better colleague, right? And I think that we all, it's all of our roles to make the workplace inclusive, and how do we want to use our privilege? And that requires the courage, right? To acknowledge that and act on it.
Lastly, Minda shares her advice for all women on how they can stay motivated and secure their seat during the pandemic while working from home.
Right now, there's so many emotions going on about being home. Like right now, people are working from home for the very first time, right? They're leveraging technology that they've never had to use before, like Trello maybe, or Slack, or, you know, Zoom, video conferencing, things of the sort. And so there's a lot that I think managers right now can definitely lean into being more empathetic. And you think about that woman who was just getting ready before all of this happened, who might have had plans to ask her manager for a raise, right? And now she might be nervous to even ask for anything because it's such a, you know, uncertain time. Or that woman of color that already was the only one and felt isolated. And now you're on video conferencing and you feel like you're not seen now, especially now that you're at home. So I think it's really important to remind ourselves that we can still secure our seat from the house. Like, your career goals don't stop because of, you know, COVID-19, but strategy, right? A different type of strategy, a different type of approach can still get you to that place. I feel like there's so many opportunities for us because now we get to assess what are some of the blind spots that maybe some of our leadership have. How can you insert yourself and ask for opportunities to be a leader in this time period? And before I went out on my own, I worked from home. I worked on the opposite coast of everyone in my office, and I still managed to secure my seat by getting opportunities, putting myself in situations where I was the expert in this space. And I even ended up managing remotely from, you know, people who were in the main office. So I don't want you to get blindsided by the fact that there aren't opportunities in this moment. And even in myself personally, I'm trying to create opportunities even being in my house, right? So I'm not exempt from this as well, but it doesn't stop. Now you ask for the coffee virtual chats, right? If there's somebody, we have more of a captive audience. If there are people that you didn't have the opportunity to talk to in the workplace, this is a great time to connect with them online. The other part of it is, you know, look around your virtual rooms. Who's present? You know, does it look diverse? Are some of those voices that typically don't get a chance to talk, are you allowing them to be visible in this new environment? So I think that we weren't doing the greatest job in many environments of being inclusive in the traditional sense. So let's make sure that we're being aware of how we are creating an inclusive virtual culture inside of our workplace. How do we be a good colleague? Maybe something's being said in a chat box that was inappropriate. How are you being a good colleague to address certain things? So the inclusion and belonging doesn't stop because we're in this environment. Again, there's so many opportunities to be had. We just have to redefine what success looks like.
Being unaware of people's experiences of inequality, like racism or sexism, often inadvertently and unwillingly leads to behaviors that are racist and sexist. We are simply blind to inequality. Being able to learn about inequality without ever having to experience it is really the ultimate privilege. I hope all of you found Meenda's advice helpful. I know that having these conversations can be difficult, but it's critical to advancing equality at work. And that's why this Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on LinkedIn, Meenda Hartz and I will be hosting a webinar on how to close the empathy gap. So if you have any questions on this topic, then please reach out to me via LinkedIn. And you can also reach out to me through my website at michellepking.com. And you can sign up to my weekly newsletter there as well. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll catch you all again next week.